Yes, it's Monday morning on My Car Guru, and the guru joins us, Lenny Lawson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Wasn't that a Jim Croce song, I've Got a Name?
Yeah, I've Got a Name. Yep, good stuff.
I've Got a Name.
Man, yeah, Jim Croce was just fantastic, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. He was one of my early guitar idols, I guess. I remember about 1973, there was a concert in Knoxville that had Jim Croce, Loggins and Messina, and the Doobie Brothers in the same concert.
Wow.
And I was sitting with my sister-in-law, and I said, Teresa, what is that? Or my future sister-in-law. I said, Teresa, what is that smell? And she says, that's marijuana. You know, that was the first time I'd ever smelled that.
Yeah.
I was somewhat innocent at that time. And I'm still innocent, relatively so.
Relatively.
Aren't you?
Yes. Well, yeah.
Never touched that stuff.
No.
I did my share of the college drinking stuff. But that's, I guess that's probably why I went from 175 pounds my senior year to 205 in about 8 months. But that's true confessions here on My Car Guru, right?
That's like the freshman, what do they call it? The freshman 15. You put on the freshman 40 or so, huh?
That's right. That's right. I filled out. Of course, I was young. I mean, I started college when I was 17, didn't turn 18 until November. Mm-hmm. So I was a youngster. I was still growing. I went from 6'1 when I graduated high school to 6'3, and then I stopped right there. Anyway, I woke up this morning to some really good news, Timmy.
That's nice. It's always good to wake up to good news. What do you got?
Yeah. Well, I have a 1976 Buick Electra 225 two-door coupe, big 455 V8 with only 8,000 miles on it. I've got it on an auction site called Bring a Trailer. I talk about it all the time because I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a $20,000, well, I probably shouldn't say that on the air, but I do have a $20,000 reserve on that thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when it hits 20 grand, it's sold. If it doesn't hit 20 grand, I've got to make a decision whether to lower my reserve or to and let it sell,
mm-hmm,
or just, you know, not sell it. So I woke up this morning and I went to Bring a Trailer, and well, first I went to my email on my phone and I saw that I had a bid. And so I went in and looked to see what the bid was, and the bid was $118,000.
Okay.
And then I went back to my email and saw that a very frantic email that I'd gotten from the guy who made the bid and said that he added an extra zero to his bid that he hadn't intended. And can I please fix it? He had already notified Bring a Trailer. Of course, they're probably asleep. They're out in California right now. But he had already notified them, and they said that they don't change bids.
Uh-oh.
So I'm having to intervene. But, you know, the thing about this could kill my auction dead in the tracks because nobody's going to bid against that bid.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they have to fix that today. My auction is over. Day after, let's see, it's got 2 days left. So they've got to jump on that and fix it, or it could really hurt my chances of selling the car. So anyway, I could just read the panic in his typewritten words. He used a lot of exclamation marks and questions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mistakes happen. Pricing mistakes happen. I have made mistakes in newspaper ads in the old days. I would leave off a zero or you know, put the wrong number, like try to sell a Chevy Vega for $39,000 or something like that instead of $3,900. You know, those mistakes happen and gone the opposite way. You know, and customers see an advertisement and they come in to buy the car for that because it's such a steal, and you have to say, I'm sorry, it was a mistake. People will say, well, you have to honor that. Do you think you do, Tim? Like if you make a $20,000 mistake pricing a car on an advertisement, you know, that's false advertisement. I've heard that before from people.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's just one of those things that, okay, obviously it's a mistake.
Right.
cut the people some slack.
Right.
You know, I was sitting at Chick-fil-A the other day having lunch, and there's this lady that was sitting beside me, a nice older lady than me. And she was waiting on her husband to pick up the food and come and sit down. We were having a conversation. And she looked over at me and she said, "You shop at Dollar General?" And I said, "Well, I think I've been in a Dollar General. Why do you ask?" And she said, "Well, we just went down there and they had a coupon or had heard about a coupon where they were selling this particular thing for two for $8. Now, I don't remember what it was." And so they go into the store and to get it, and the people in the store said, "Well, you have to have the online coupon. You have to get it off your phone." She says, "Well, I don't have one of those phones. I have a flip phone." "And you mean I can't buy a two for $8? And so the husband got furious, and they called the manager and all that stuff. Tim, isn't it just amazing that somebody is going to go to that much trouble and pitch a fit? Well, over little things,
especially,
you know, that's just
especially in the world we live in today. I think that there's more a tendency for that to happen, for people to kind of go crazy over something like that. That's an obvious goof or mistake or something. But yeah, I can see people, especially nowadays, really pushing that.
I just think, you know, people need to be a little bit more forgiving and understanding. We are far less so with strangers than we are with people that we know. Of course, sometimes I guess people that we know, we don't cut them any slack either.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just in business. It's just not worth getting upset about. I mean, you know, so your French fries were cold. You know, go call them and tell them. They'll probably give you free French fries next time. Don't go off. I've seen people go off in the service drive in the showroom over the years. I've had to ask a few people to leave. You know, just because they were completely out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's because something else is going on in their life.
Yes.
This was just the thing that you know, put them over the edge.
Yes. Yep. And especially, I mean, with social media now, you know, we've talked about this before. People feel like they have a forum on some social media to just go off as well.
Yeah. You know, I totally understand and agree with a lot of the issues people have with Facebook in terms of, you know, banning or restricting content. I've looked at Facebook. I was not an early adopter as far as Facebook was concerned or social media in general. But, you know, I think what we have to do is accept the fact that it's here. It's here to stay. You know, it's going to get modified. But I look at Facebook as a pipeline. It's a pipeline to my audience, to my friends. It's a pipeline for my business. I was talking to a businessman the other day who refuses to use Facebook because he thinks, you know, everybody's, you know, promoting their life and their lifestyle and stuff like that. And I get it. I mean, I think you ought to have a plan. You know, if you're going to use Facebook, you know, my family members that are pretty extended around the country, they like to see pictures and of family members and stuff like that and what's going on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your circle of friends depends on, you know, how many friends you have and stuff. But I sat down a long time ago and decided that my Facebook mission was going to be three basic things. One, witness to my faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we suffered a pretty incredible loss, as you did, losing a child.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Facebook was a sustaining thing for me at that time. And also, over the years, people could see us getting better. You know, us as a family, you know, recovering and not giving up, you mm-hmm. know, because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I would post a lot of things about things that I did to help me and we did as a family to help ourselves recover. I really think that was a mission, you know, that was a ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that I think that's important. The second thing is just to educate people. And I put a lot of things on my Facebook page about cars. And, you know, this is my passion. I mean, other than family, I mean, cars are a huge part of my life, and it's something that I love, and I love diving into. It's historical, it's mechanical. You know, it punches all the buttons for me, and you know, one of the buttons that it has pushed for me in recent years has been just the incredible people that I have met because of not only this radio show, but a lot of it has to do with this radio show, but with just dealing with automobiles and the passion that surrounds it in so many people's lives. And I'm not talking about selling new cars and stuff at the dealership. I mean, I meet a lot of incredible people there too, but just the old cars and the old stories and being able to buy and sell and rehabilitate a lot of these things. So I use Facebook to educate people on that. I made a post the other day about, you know, what you have to do if you're wanting to preserve a car, that time is the enemy of a car as much as use is. You know, if you don't use a car and it sits there, all kinds of bad things can happen. And a lot of things that can happen, you can even do internal engine damage to your car if you let it sit, if you don't use it, if you don't keep the fluid circulating and the hot, getting hot and then cold and then hot and then cold. You know, these are things that engines and cars need. They need to be driven. And my point was, if you're not going to drive your old car, then don't sell. I mean, then sell the car. You know, I mean, so many of them just sit there and deteriorate. I have this route that I drive to my mom's house. It's a back way so I can avoid all the red lights and stuff. And I pass by two Ford Broncos behind a house. They look like they're anywhere from 1966 to 1976 or whatever the last year was for the Bronco, the original Bronco. And they're just sitting there, Tim. And I know a lot of people that have gone there to try to buy them, and they won't sell the cars. Mm-hmm. And they're sitting in the backyard rotting.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that. You know, and maybe it's a family member that passed away or something, and, you know, that was their favorite vehicle. And I get the nostalgia thing and that. But if you're going to keep something, you know, preserve it. You know, put it in storage. You know, put it in enclosed storage. Put a cover over it. Do something. So anyway, this is another thing that I do on Facebook. And then the final thing is basically to promote what I do for a living. And I can't understand a business person not using one of the most powerful pipelines that's available to you to reach directly to people.
Right.
I mean, we use direct mail in advertising, and that's semi-effective, very low response rate. You know, if you send out a direct mail piece, about a response rate of anywhere around 3-5% is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And it's just a flat piece of paper. And with Facebook, you can do video and all that stuff. So it's very useful in that regard. You know, and I've just decided I'm going to not worry about the politics. I'm not going to worry about all the things that people hate about Facebook, and just use it for my mission and what I'm trying to accomplish.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense, and there's a lot of people looking at it too. So you know, you got a pretty big audience there.
That's right. That's right. Well, we'll take our first break and be back here in just a minute.
All right, back here Monday morning on My Car Guru with Lenny Lawson.
I was on my tractor yesterday, and I was up in the woods, probably, I'm going to say, 500 yards from my house. And I was bush hogging, just trying to clear some space where we go over and play sometimes and walk through the woods and stuff. And all of a sudden, I was trying to turn. I have a big front loader on the front, and I have a 7-foot bush hog on the back, or 6-foot bush hog on the back. And I was trying to turn, and the vehicle wasn't turning. And I looked down, my left front tire was off of the rim. Basically, it lost its air. And so I said, well, this is inconvenient. I mean, this is a terrible place, you know, for somebody to try to get into, you know, like a rollback or something like that to rescue me. So I just said, okay, let me see if I can turn this thing around and get to my house, or get at least to some flat ground in case I have to, you know, have somebody come get this thing. But luckily, the wheel, Tim, the tire stayed on the rim as long as I went really slowly. And basically, you know, what you're concerned about is damaging the rim. So you can always buy a new tire. Of course, you can buy a new rim as well, but I didn't want to have to spend that money. But I was able to go extremely slowly and make it back. and parked it out here on the driveway, and the guys came over and got it this morning. I'll never forget that we got a phone call from a guy way back in the late 80s. I don't remember the exact year, and I won't say the gentleman's name. He's passed away now. But he had a flat tire about 2 miles from his house. Now, usually if somebody has a flat tire, they're going to pull over and stop, right? And they're going to either change it or they're going to call somebody to change it. Today, they just use their cell phone and call somebody. Back then, we didn't have phones in cars unless you were, you know, Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And then we had, you know, and then what happens is you, you know, change your tire and so forth. But what happened with this guy is he decided to drive home. Now, nobody really knows why. I think I know why he drove home. But he drove all the way home, about 2 miles from where he had a flat tire. When we went out to pick up the vehicle, of course, the tire was disintegrated. It was completely gone. And, Tim, that wheel was ground off all the way to the hub.
What?
It had gotten so hot that it locked up that wheel. And the tire was, I mean, the wheel was then, you know, basically curved on the top and on the bottom. It was totally flat where he had ground it. Can you imagine the spark that was emanating from that vehicle as it was going down the road? That's something that you never want to do. Now, if you're in a tractor in a field and you got grass under you, it's not a problem. But if you have a flat tire, immediately turn off, because you can damage your front end. You can damage your suspension, your brakes. If that gets into your rotors and your brakes and your front suspension, that could turn into a serious thing. Get off the road, but get far off the road. I saw some people on the interstate when I was headed to Cincinnati pulling a trailer. And I swear that person had his back turned, and he was kind of looking over the hood of a car, and his heels were almost standing on the line.
Mm.
And as distracted as people are these days, driving cars, I mean, you know, you're better off not to do anything to a car. If you're on the interstate, you're on a four-lane, if you can't get way off the road, park it there, turn on your flashers, and get the heck away from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm hearing way too many accidents of people, you know, getting run over, cars getting hit when they're pulled over because of distracted drivers. I don't know if you see that much of that, Tim, but I just think that's something you need to be aware of, and certainly do not drive on a vehicle that has a flat tire. This weekend, I was fortunate to be able to drive a 1978 280Z that I was able to buy from a radio show listener, and they blessed me with that because I'm just, you know, it's a keeper. It's one of those lifetime keepers. I'll never sell that car.
Mm-hmm.
But 1978 280Z, Nissan or Datsun 280Z with 65,000 actual miles on it. I drove it out to Mom's house yesterday and back, and the air conditioning was cool last week, but this week it's not, so I'm going to have to get it recharged and find a leak. But what I was thinking about as I was going down the road, you know, the car has no power steering. It has kind of a clunky shifter. It has probably the best handling dynamics that a car in 1978 had. Not too long ago, I was driving a 1959 MGA. Of course, that's a car that was built in England, and, you know, little four-cylinder engine, dual SU carburetors, nothing really powerful, but a very nimble car. And, you know, and now I have a 2005 Porsche Carrera S, which it's another keeper. It's a car that I drive occasionally. And then I recently drove the new 2021 Mach 1 Mustang. So this is one of the things I love about what I do in the car business is I get to drive multi-generational vehicles. And you can just see the evolution of cars and how far they have come in terms of just capability, you know, performance, fuel economy, all of those things. I mean, the cars that we drive today are the safest that there have ever been, the most efficient there have ever been. They are the most reliable they have ever been.
Mm-hmm.
The quality that we have today, I mean, we really, really take it for granted. And cars have gotten so much better. But I'll tell you, the nostalgic mind in my, you know, the way I think, there's just something about jumping in an old car and driving it that centers me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just, it takes me back. It makes me appreciate the old days.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I really enjoy is just the looks that you get and the emotions that you generate in other people. I've had very few cars that I have driven, older cars, that has gotten more attention than that 280Z.
Hmm.
You know, because so many people kind of grew up now, you know, people that are in car buying age, they grew up really as kids, they saw those cars.
Yeah.
And remember those cars. And the young people, especially people in their 30s and 40s, they think that that is like an E-type Jaguar or something. I mean, it's just they absolutely love that car. And that's where, you know, the car show thing and the nostalgia, the rod runs, the Amelia Island Concours, those are the things that really are a great way to connect people, kind of like Facebook, you know, if you handle it right. And but I just wanted to pass that on. It's just if you've got an old car that you know, is sitting in a garage, that, you know, it deserves to be out. It deserves to be driven. And you know, some old cars, I've had people call me right now with cars that are from the, you know, four-door cars from the 50s and stuff, and they're not worth much, and you know, they want me to help them buy them or sell them, stuff like that. You know, those cars do have some value, but you're not going to get that much out of them. But if you're not going to get much out of it, just fix it up and drive it. Just enjoy it. I think it'll do as much for you as it does for me.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take our last break and be back here in just a minute.
All right, talking old cars here on My Car Guru as we're back for the final portion here.
Your favorite, I asked him during the break if he could have any car, any old car that he could just put in his garage and drive occasionally, what would it be? Tell him what you said.
I said about a 72 model Chevelle and an orange one. They came in orange, as you know, and I just love those cars. Loved them.
Yeah, that was a good body style, basically from 68 through 72, and then Chevrolet ruined the Chevelle in 73.
Mm-hmm.
I remember say, why did they do that to that car? They also changed the Monte Carlo in significant ways back then, and that grew on me, but that Chevelle body style never did. But that was a good one, and, you know, everybody has one that they remember and cherished either looking at or driving, and, you know, these cars are out there, and you can, if you look for them, you can find them. Just be careful what you buy, because buy one that's a driver. You know, never go out and don't start any projects, because it costs so much more to restore a car than you ever think it's going to.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like building a house right now. Now's probably not a time to build a house because of the cost of building materials and stuff, and it's definitely that way on a car. Most projects, I'd say less than 10% of all purchased car projects ever get completed by people, because they just find out how hard it is and how expensive it is to do. So buy one that's done. That's my advice.
Buy one that's done. And I guess we're done for this edition of My Car Guru on a Monday morning. There you go. So we'll talk to you tomorrow, Lenny.